Okay, hey guys, and welcome to episode number 134 of the Three Drinks In podcast. I am your host, Vince. Over there is Phil.
Hey.
This is one of our Shaken Not Stirred episodes. We are going forward with the next in the James Bond series of films with Live and Let Die, the first movie starring Mr. Roger Moore. Before we get to all that, though, I want to remind you that Three Drinks In is available on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, Overcast, and Radio Public. Just search for Three Drinks In Podcast. You'll easily find us. Click subscribe, tell your friends, leave a review, most importantly. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Three Drinks In Pod. That's at the number 3 Drinks In Pod. Like us on Facebook and email us at threedrinksinpodcast@gmail.com. That's everything?
Yep.
That's everything. Here we go. Okay. We're up. We're running. It's happening now.
This is where the magic happens.
This is... All right, so Live and Let Die.
Yep. So. Why do you say it's a weird...
It's the... what's his name? The Christopher Walken version of the title.
Live and Let Die.
So fun fact about this movie, Roger Moore was 45 when they began to film the movie.
That is a fun fact.
Which, yeah, kind of puts a little hole in my theory of like, well, it couldn't be Idris Elba for the next James Bond after Daniel Craig. Because, you know, he's already like 43 or whatever it was, and you know, but you know, and Roger Moore made more than anybody.
I think he's tied with Sean Connery.
Is he?
If you count the remake that Connery did.
Never Say Never Again. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, still, that's not bad, you know. Starting at 45, and they made them much more frequently back then. They can crank out like one a year, and it really really wasn't a big deal. But, you know, if you're in your mid-50s and you're still doing this, good for you.
I mean, I think he was criticized for that. After a while, they were like, he's pretty old. But he doesn't look it in this one.
No, he's a strapping young man.
Yeah.
In this movie. Very handsome. All right, before we get into the movie, which was a bit of a interesting affair, where does Moore fall into, like, you know, the James Bonds for you? Is he towards the bottom? Is he in the middle? We've discussed basically, you know, in this series we've done just, you know, Sean Connery and George Lazenby and now Moore, but we've reviewed other more recent Bond movies, including Daniel Craig's and Pierce Brosnan's, we, you know, haven't gotten to with this one, but we know them pretty well. Is Moore at the bottom, the middle, the top for you? Where do you rank him in terms of Bonds?
I'd put him in the middle. I actually was a little impressed with him in this one. He's quite a strapping young lad. He had a really nice head of hair. That was like clearly not a toupee like Sean Connery's was.
Yeah. It never moved too, if you notice.
Oh, I'm sure they sprayed the hell out of it, but like he still gives off the kind of vibe that he's ruthless when he wants to be. And he can deliver those really cheesy one liners with such a straight face. You know, which is Connery couldn't do that. He always did it with this kind of like a smirk or a wink. which was a charming thing that Connery could do. And, you know, like Daniel Craig can't pull them off at all. He doesn't get very many, but Roger Moore could do it well enough that it was like, and there was a lot of them in this movie because this is where they really started getting goofy. But it was like, oh, you know, I laughed. I laughed when he would say stupid things. So I was like, yeah, it's enjoyable to watch.
See, I completely disagree. I felt that he...
Well, you're wrong. That's fine.
Like he does it with a straight face because he's kind of like nothing going on there for him. Like there's not a whole lot of depth. You know, there are times that the script calls for him to kill somebody or light something on fire or do something kind of dangerous or whatever. And yeah, you know, the character seems capable enough of pulling that off. But yeah, there's not a whole lot going on behind the eyes there, you know? He just sort of seems like I was told to say this ridiculous line, so here it is. And they were really bad in this movie. Like they you're right, they were just starting to go, well, we've got the formula, let's just give you more of the same and, you know, amp it up rather than try to make it different and deviate.
I felt like it was kind of, he knew what it was, but they weren't giving him enough goofiness. Like it's clearly a really goofy movie.
Yeah.
And like it felt like he wanted to play it that way and they didn't want him to. So like, they're like, we'll play it straight. And he's like, really? Play it straight? That's what you want me to do?
All right. I'm supposed to play this straight?
I mean, I'm just making that all up, but it's just how it feels because it's so odd. The movie's so strange. The
movie is quite strange, but I don't know. I thought I remember when they cast Daniel Craig, they gave him a hard time. Oh, he's blonde. And I go, okay, wasn't Roger Moore blonde? And he's not necessarily like, you know, Fabio, but he's got does have very fair hair. And no one, you know, really seemed to give a rat's ass about that. So I thought that was a kind of an odd criticism of Daniel Craig when you have Roger Moore, who looks very much like a pretty boy. There's nothing remotely kind of rough around the edges about him, nor sort of could there be. And he was very pretty. He's a pretty guy.
I think they've done enough Bonds now where he's been many things. He's been a pretty boy. He's been a womanizing kind of guy. He was this with Timothy Dalton was much more like a tortured soul kind of thing. And now Craig was kind of like the brute, you know?
Yeah.
You've kind of hit most of them now, so whatever.
Yeah, no, he looks part of the part really well. Like he kind of has one side of the character down, which is this suaveness to him, you know. But I can't say multifaceted because the character is not all that complicated, but just sort of one angle, you know, he's got that part pretty solid. The rest of it, he kind of stumbles his way through it. And I think you're right about the fact that like, He didn't want to play it that seriously because it's not. And, you know, like I said, they were telling him, don't make it too campy. Just kind of give us the line as it is. And he's like, really? Because it's kind of a stupid line.
Yeah. And like all of them are like that in this movie. Like they're all taking it really seriously, even though this is the goofiest one yet.
Yeah, I guess they just were sort of stumbling into, like, it just seemed like a movie built by committee, and I'm sure that had a lot to do with it, but like there were so many different aspects of it that were working against it that you really wonder, like, well, who decided to do all this? Probably 15 people would be the answer to that question, but well, let's get into it then. What'd you think of Live and Let Die?
I think it had a few moments that were actually enjoyable, and 90% of it was hot garbage.
I think your text to me was the best part. I'm not sure if this is racist or flabbergastingly racist.
Yeah.
I'm sitting there having breakfast with my in-laws. I just burst out laughing at the table. They go, what? I go, this is really funny. This is like a blaxploitation film starring James Bond.
Yeah. Apparently that was like what was really popular in 1973. So they tried to put as much of that stuff in as they could. And it was extremely obvious in when he's in New York, you know, when they're calling him honky and he's...
Say, Jim.
Yeah. They call him Jim. We just relax now, Jim. We'll take you to the boss and they, you know, stuff like that. Okay, that's whatever. Are stiff British people really into blaxploitation films? Probably not. I mean, there was some comedy to be mined there when he would like walk into these places and he was so obviously standing out. Like on top of being white, you know, he was also wearing like a beautiful suit and his hair was immaculate and it was funny. I thought they were going to play that up more. But he was playing it straight, like, well, I'm here to talk to Mr. Big or whatever. I'm like, look, we all know how ridiculous this is. Why don't they roll with it a little here?
Yeah.
But they had a few moments like that, which I thought were kind of funny. But the racist part, aside from the fact that every black person was a villain, literally...
There was one black guy, not a villain.
Oh, the guy on his boat.
Two black guys, not a villain. One of them was a CIA guy, the guy that saves him in Harlem from being shot in the alley.
Oh yeah,
and because right. And then he dies, and you never hear from him again. You just kind of assume that he's dead. He's dead. Because he's standing on the street corner staring at the Filet of Soul restaurant in New Orleans, just like the guy was in the beginning of the movie.
Oh.
When the band, the funeral band comes by.
Of that, the same guy?
I believe so. And he's fairly competent in the beginning because he saves Bond, and that's kind of a big deal. But, you know, it seems like a very... It's an odd way to get murdered, so I guess you couldn't see it coming. But, you know, we've got eyes on the restaurant, meaning there's a guy standing across the street staring at it.
Yeah.
That's what we mean when we say we have eyes on the restaurant.
I thought it was really odd that, I mean, racist. Maybe they didn't think of it like this at the time. But the villain is from a fictional Caribbean country, San Monique. And... on like all the natives on the island are doing those weirdo voodoo dances and rituals, and they kill the guy with a snake that's clearly fake and all this other stuff. And I'm sitting here and, like, you know, it's a long scene for some reason. I'm sitting here going, I wonder how much of this is true or accurate and how much of this is just gobbledygook nonsense that white people put into the movie because they don't understand black people. Because, like, if it's realistic, then why didn't they just put it on a real island? And if it's not realistic, then what the hell were you thinking? Because it's quite offensive.
Well,
I mean, I know there's such a thing as voodoo, but that's about all I know, to be honest. And so, like, you know, the dances and the chants they were doing, and I'm like...
Yeah, those scenes when they're dancing...
Like, is this made up? What is this?
I mean, if you go back and look at them, they're grotesque.
Yes, they're quite sexual.
Yeah, and like grotesque in a sort of racial sensitivity way, where they're like licking the poles for things, and they're humping the air. And that's a good question. Like, if this is, you know, typical of voodoo mass rituals, then fine, okay. Why not just put it on? I mean, the issue, I guess, is that the only island where this is really a thing is Haiti. And they based the character of a bad guy whose name I don't know because it never really came up that I could, you know, his name just didn't stick in my head. They based him on the dictator of Haiti, whose name was Papa Doc. And I guess you kind of run into an issue where, like, with the Russians, it was sort of one thing. Okay, so finally, we like the Russians can be the bad guy, but everything with James Bond in this, you know, in the 60s and 70s and the 80s with the Russians, all never kind of ended in a stalemate. Like they didn't defeat Russia; they just defeated the agent, and you know, so you kind of run into a Superman punching Hitler problem where if you say, okay, we're gonna just say this is Haiti and we're gonna call the bad guy something similar to the real dictator's name and have him be toppled by James Bond, maybe you run into the problem of that's really not how it works. There are actual people suffering in Haiti right now. So maybe we don't want to be too on the nose with this, otherwise it would be insensitive, which is hysterical considering how unbelievably insensitive the rest of the film was.
Yeah, it was definitely like, I'm not sure what I'm watching. And most of the, I mean, the Bond movies are not realistic in any way, but those sorts of things, like culturally, are pretty accurate. You know, when it comes to like, well, Russia, what do people do or look like in Russia? Well, they look like what you see in the films, but this was so specific a thing that I was like, is this a real thing? Are they really doing this? And I don't know.
Yeah, I felt like that cutaway scene in Family Guy. He's like, this is more awkward than that time we had to watch your Uncle Jerry's snuff film.
Oh, yeah.
He's sitting there. He's like, are they really going to kill that guy? She's like, shut up, Peter.
And she shushes him, yeah.
I know. Like, they're all sitting there wrapped, and he's nervous as all hell. It's kind of watches it kind of nervously. I was like, oh, this is weird. I'm not very comfortable.
Yeah, not to mention, like, on the other hand, all these other people from, you know, they would go to New Orleans, they go to New York. Not all those people are from Haiti or the Caribbean.
Yeah.
So, like, just because they're black, they're all in on it. I thought it was very surprising.
Yeah, that was really, like, everybody who
down
was
to, like, the street corner guys.
Yeah, I made some notes and I was looking at them, and so he gets into the cab.
Oh, I made quite a lot of notes.
He gets into the cab at one point, and guy tells him to drive him to Harlem or whatever else it is. Or the one good line was, you know, if you go really fast, there's an extra 20 in it. He goes, hey, for $20, I'll take you to a Ku Klux Klan cookout.
I know.
That was actually kind of well delivered. But like, so he jumps in the car and he's going somewhere. And it's when he leaves the voodoo shop, he's following the other car in the cab. He says, follow that car. Goes, okay. And the woman in the voodoo shop radios a guy across the street saying, okay, he just left. He got into a cab. And the guy says, I'm on him. I'm following him. Why? Because the cabbie was also part of the gang, too. So why would you need to follow them if the cabbie was taking him right where they wanted him to go? So, like, there was really nobody in the movie who wasn't integral to the, you know, nefarious plot. There were no innocent black bystanders in the entire film. And there were a lot of innocent white bystanders in the film. The lady in the plane, the guy that owned the plane. You know, like all the white folks in Louisiana who had nothing to do with it, the police in Louisiana. But every black person.
The wedding he ruins.
What's that?
The wedding he ruins.
The wedding he ruins. But all the black people are either, you know, incompetent because that guy gets killed, or working for Bond in some way, or part of the bad guys. Mm-hmm. And did you catch that guy's name, too?
Which guy?
Quarrel.
Which guy are you talking about?
The boat captain who works with him, sets the bombs in the end and everything.
Oh, yeah.
I Googled it. I think it's either the same character or supposedly his son from Dr. No.
Oh.
Yeah. It's the same character name, Quarrel.
I was stunned that on that guy's boat, he has pictures of naked women, like you would, and they weren't blurred out in any way. They were quite obvious.
I missed that.
Oh, yeah. I was like, oh, how'd he get away with that?
They dropped a couple of curses in this movie, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, shit and shit. Ass. It was the first time you ever heard that in a Bond movie, I think. Mm. But, you know, it was the 70s. So,
Jive turkey.
Seriously. So, was there a thing in the beginning, and it's possible I missed this, where they told you why they thought that the bad guy was the bad guy?
No.
Okay,
which
good.
Which is the first thing I wrote on my list of things. Why is any of this happening? Why is this happening? Like, even the very first murder, they murder an English diplomat. Why? What was the point of doing that?
So I think they murdered him because MI6 was starting to, they were on to him. Whatever Yaphet Kotto's, Mr. Big, they were on to that guy. Now, they didn't tell you why or what it was he was doing or what they were nervous he was going to do, but they were on to him, and then therefore they, you know, the guy died in this really awkward public way during the middle of a UN meeting.
I know. And the two agents were killed.
Yeah, the one guy on the island and during the ritual and the other guy at on the street in New Orleans. But yeah, you didn't get any idea as what it was they were suspicious of.
Right. It was M goes into Bond's house in the beginning of the film. He says, three people have died. We suspect Dr. Kananga. Go find out what you know. He goes, okay. And I'm like, but why would he kill any of those people? And what do they think he's doing? And it just never came up.
Suspicious of what?
It was just assumed he was the bad guy.
Because this is like, the most racist movie of all time. I mean,
even the CIA were like, they were tapping his phones and bugging his room. And I'm like, why?
I mean,
we don't do this for other leaders, do we?
I mean, Jesus Christ, talk about, you know, breaches of diplomatic immunity and all kinds of, like, you know, Birth of a Nation, this movie.
Yeah,
that's the kind of order it goes in at this point. Because the only reason they have to suspect he's the bad guy is because the script says he's the bad guy.
Yeah, I didn't.
It's like they got a copy of it. They go, oh, look, I think it's this guy.
Like, it's what I wrote on my, the first thing I wrote on my list is racist. And underneath that, it says a couple of things, you know. And then the third one is they never say why Kananga is bad. Because they don't. I mean, he is, but at the same time, I'm like, why are we following this person?
And in reality, like, okay, he's bad, but besides the killing of the people who were snooping on him, which, you know, you'd probably want to kill them too, what is it he has done?
He's giving away drugs at his restaurants, which you find out much later.
Oh, he was in the process of doing that? I thought that the plan was just to dump 2 tons of heroin on the cities of the U.S., but, like, he hadn't done it yet.
Yeah, I think they were starting to do it. Like, they were finding out that the drugs were coming from his restaurants.
Okay.
And the thing, too, is that he's Mr. Big.
Okay, so I have a thing with that. Why was he Mr. Big?
Because I think he could do, I don't know. I think he could do those things that, as an American, pretending to be an American gangster, that he couldn't do as the head of state.
So why didn't he just hire an American gangster to run his American operations like any other gangster would?
I guess that way if the guy gets caught, he couldn't, like, trace it back to him. I don't know.
I just, like, it was this whole thing where, like, he needed to be in two places at once, and so he put on this insanely bad makeup that, like, you knew that there was, and, like, after about a minute, I go, oh, that's just him.
See, covered, I didn't realize that was him. I didn't realize, but then when he took it off, I'm like, why is he doing that? I wasn't, like, surprised. I was like, what? That seems overly elaborate. Make sense.
I mean, sometimes, like, one of the things I appreciate about these movies is that, for the most part, there's always something in there that's just strange. You know, just the way that certain people behave, and there's always one really bizarre thing going on. I always liked the way that Dr. No was really kind of weird and creepy and didn't talk to people in person and put people in rooms. And like, I love that scene in Dr. No when they bring the geologist to the island and they put him in that room and just the guy talks to him through a PA system. It just, it's odd and creepy and it doesn't really serve a purpose but to make the audience uneasy. And I think that that's what they were trying to do in this case, was just to do something so bizarre that didn't seem to have a real reason, didn't help or hurt what he was doing. It just made him bizarre. But yeah, it just, it seemed unnecessary. Like, you, he has all these henchmen. Why don't they do the thing he's doing in New York? He, you know, just so he can run the operation from his little island. And it just seemed like this whole unnecessary thing. I don't know. It's very, very,
I don't know.
It's freaking bizarre.
I thought it was very odd at the end. Like, they're storming his little stronghold and they find his lab and stuff. And basically anything that had to do with this, the main plot line, made no sense, because the guy blows up his poppy fields and they explode. And it, but when Bond goes to confront him, he is hunky dory about it. Like, he doesn't even, oh, well, that's fine.
Yeah, they're, it's a resilient plant. Like,
yeah, like, it wasn't phased whatsoever. Like, everything was going to happen anyway. Like, well, the plants are on their way. I'm like, no, the plants are blown up. They're gone. You know, plants are very resilient, except to fire.
Turns out they have no natural defense to that.
Yeah. They can't put themselves out. So the whole time I was like, well, this is the most odd scene. He's not even mad about it.
Yeah, like, he gets down there and he's basically, you know, yeah, he's beaten him otherwise. Like,
right.
Like, there's nothing else left to do but to kill him. And, he, and by the way, that was the most ridiculous death.
The worst death scene in the history of cinema.
Oh, my God. That was like a space mutiny death.
Oh, my God.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Can you just swallow those and they make you inflate? Like, don't you have to have something that, like, makes them go?
Who was that character from Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory? Like, that's kind of what I got out of that.
It's Violet Beauregard.
Thank you. It's, you know, it's just a somewhat more violent version of the Violet Beauregard scene from that movie.
Like, if he'd popped and all of his guts showered all over everything, I'd be like, whoa, that was hardcore.
No.
That was metal as fuck. But he wasn't. He'd exploded like a balloon.
So he was, yeah, apparently he was made of air. He had no idea.
At least they prefaced it when he had, like, the couch explode.
Yeah, they gave you an idea. This is what's going to happen.
Yeah.
But you kind of figure, well, maybe they'll make it look moderately, you know, realistic. No, it's just going to look stupid.
Yeah, I don't. That's like, that was the goofiest of stuff. I'm just like, whoa, that is so lame.
Yeah. So, Jane Seymour's breasts were in this movie as well. Did you catch that?
No, her hair was really distracting.
She did have a lot of
so much hair. I'm like, how does her neck not snap?
I did notice that at some point when she's climbing something. I'm like, my God, that's an ass ton of hair you have there. Jesus Christ.
So much hair.
She's not a large lady either. You know, she's maybe 87 pounds.
I know.
You know, but this is her first movie, too.
It said introducing Jane Seymour.
Introducing Jane Seymour. Future Dr. Yeah. Quinn medicine woman.
But you know what? Like, she was so unbelievably beautiful. It didn't matter.
Right. Yeah. Like, everything about her, like, her, the character was weird. And again, weary for the sake of weird stuff going on there. Bizarrely antiquated ideas about, like, virginity and what have you. And you're never quite sure which side she's on, because she plays Bond initially in a very awkward way. I don't quite know what the point of that was. Like, she agrees, she sleeps with him, and then agrees to hand him back over to Kananga. And then once she finds out that Kananga has no use for her anymore, she goes back to Bond. But it doesn't matter, because she's just so attractive. It's like, yeah, great.
Yeah.
Whatever you want to do, guys. Just.
She had ridiculous outfits, though.
Oh, God. So the hair pieces of the like the headdress. Yeah. Sitting there in that chair, I'm just like, who had to design that? I'm wondering myself.
Yeah, it was really odd that that was such a prominent thing.
The voodoo that, stuff?
Well, just that it turned out to be real. Like, she really could see the future until she sleeps with Bond. I'm like, if this had just been like a superstitious, just only to the bad guy, then we could be like, okay, he's got a weird fixation with voodoo cards and the tarot, but like, it's taken as like a given that she really can do that.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay.
I thought it was interesting that she, so, you know, there's a lot of, you know, there's so much sort of like pop culture superstition when it comes to voodoo that you really kind of take everything with it. It's all kind of tongue in cheek in everything you see it in, with the voodoo dolls and the tarot cards, and you know, people take it seriously, and good for them, that's fine. But for the most part, you know, we generally don't. And in this movie, you're not supposed to take it seriously. You know, all the voodoo shops that he goes into, the people who do it, they're all kind of insane. They're all evil, you know, all the, but like the one person who can truly access the power of it is a white lady.
Yeah.
I'm like, it just kind of stood out for me. I'm like, all these black people are interacting with it in some way, shape, or form. And the only one who's truly magical is Baron Samedi, who is like an actual god or some kind of a totem in that religion. And he appears here as a character. And he's the guy at the end on the train too. So he never dies. He's just there all the time. But aside from him, everyone else, you know, the only way they can really access any sort of truth from the voodoo is from the white lady. And I just thought that was kind of hilarious and sort of full circle about the whole racism thing.
Yeah, I was reading the synopsis on Wikipedia, and it was like the people on the island are being misled, and because they're superstitious, they'll do whatever the good doctor wants, you know.
Right.
And that doesn't really come across. Like, you see the underground lair underneath the cemetery where they have stuff pop up, you know, like they tap on the graves and then the guy gets lifted out of the cellar like an old-timey magic trick. But like, they don't ever mention that stuff. So like, as far as I could tell, people on the island and all the black people are just bad people, and there's no hoodwinking going on.
Yeah, it's sort of like, I guess they were trying to go for the fact that he's controlling all the locals on the island with all the fancy technology, making the voodoo seem real. But that's not explicit. That's not entirely clear, because the people are still using the ritual to murder other white folks.
Yeah.
And you're never quite sure if they're in on it or if they're not. They appear to be as in on it as the rest of them. They're just dressed more the part.
Right. Like, when they're on the island later, there's other people just look normal. Like, they just look like a poor backwards Caribbean country. They don't look like they're from the 1400s, and we just stumbled upon them like pirates, you know. So that was definitely not made clear. If I may offer a criticism, that made no sense.
Definitely not made clear. I have one other thing to mention before we get to the big ridiculous thing.
The big one.
Yeah. So Felix, I have always had an issue with this character. Because it's so remarkably inconsistent, and it makes my, you know, I just, it kind of, so the character appears in a half a dozen of these movies. I'm sorry, not half a dozen, about 12 or so of these movies. you meet him in the first one, and he's just the American James Bond. You know, he's super handsome. He's got the sunglasses. But there's really no difference between them in terms of the superficial stuff. And then by the time you get to Goldfinger, he's an old man. Like he's in his 60s and he's just like radioing in for help. He's not doing anything cool like Bond is. So I guess they wanted to distinguish between, you know, the American and the British are suave and cool, and Felix is just kind of like, you know, well, I'm sure Bond will handle it, no big deal. And then you get to this movie, and he's just like it's like he walked out of a Noel Coward play, and he's just happens to be doing this.
Yeah.
What the hell is this guy doing? You know, he's on, so Bond destroys this airplane in, like, was it, that's not Miami, right? It's New Orleans. So, you know, and he's on the phone to the guy that owns the airplane and the flight school, saying, "No, sir, I'm sure you're a patriot," and blah blah. Like, oh my God, what the hell is going on here?
Yeah, he played like damage control,
which is fine, but he played it like an idiot. Like they neutered that character completely, and I thought that was already done when he was kind of a like a 6 days to retirement oaf in Goldfinger, where he didn't really do anything. And yeah, this movie, he just looks like a schmuck.
Yeah, I don't know. He's a different person every time.
And that's not the end of the world. I do like the way that he was played by Jeffrey Wright in the new movies.
It's frustrating. It's like Blofeld. What exactly am I looking at here?
I think that's worse because he's like the main villain, the guy, right. The guy, you know, who's.
Well, Felix is the impetus for an entire Timothy Dalton film because in that one he gets murdered.
That's where I'm going with it. Yeah, it's like this. Like if he's supposed to carry so much weight as a character that Bond goes rogue and decides to go and murder a bunch of people. Bond didn't always do that. Like that's a feature of all these new movies where, you know, something happens and Bond goes rogue and goes after this guy even though he isn't supposed to. That's like a Daniel Craig thing, and it's getting a little tired. But it, you know, it was a big deal for him to do that in, was that the Living Daylights or?
Yeah, one of those.
One of the two. He only did two. But yeah, so like this character has to have that kind of weight that when he dies, Bond goes bananas. More so than when his wife dies in, you know, in the one with George Lazenby.
Right.
So knowing that's coming, kind of like, just what the hell is this?
I mean, it's okay if you change the actor, but it's just when you don't, when they change what they're like and their personality and all that stuff, then it's very frustrating because it's like, I thought that guy was such and such or what have you. So, like, M is the same in this film as he's been. He's been the same guy along with Q. But it doesn't matter who's playing M as long as he hands out the mission. You know, if he starts doing cartwheels and stuff, you'd be like, what'd they do to M? Whereas Felix, like, sometimes he's the suave version of, you know, the American version of Bond. This time he's just like the bumbling American guy who's trying to keep up. And sometimes he's you know, a day away from retirement or what have you. So what kind of relationship do they have? Well, they don't seem to have one.
Right.
He's just the guy I call when I'm in America.
Right.
Because I don't trust anyone else. Okay. I find it a little annoying that it's always like he's the only other American agent we ever talked to, which is why I think in the Pierce Brosnan films when they got the other guy, the guy Joe Don Baker. I was like, well, at least he's the same guy in every film. As annoying as he was.
Yeah, he gets a little bit more ridiculous in the later ones. Like, I liked him a lot. Well, yeah. I mean, I liked him a lot in Goldfinger because he was just not what you expect. And he was like annoyed about it, like, you know, to do with the passwords. Like, oh, come on, let's get my car. You know, I enjoyed that, but then it got really ridiculous. I like Jeffrey Wright's version of him. In the Daniel Craig ones, because he doesn't look like a super duper secret agent, but he is, and that's kind of cool. You know, I like when they get someone to play against type. But so now we should probably talk about JW.
Oh my God.
JW Pepper.
JW Pepper and his brother-in-law Billy Bob.
Billy Bob. I mean, so you didn't see Three Billboards Outside of Ebbing, Missouri, did you?
I did not.
No, I didn't either. And I kind of
All right.
I kind of wanted to because it's got Frances McDormand in it and she's good in everything. And I like Sam Rockwell a lot. I think he's really talented. And Woody Harrelson is also in it. But I read a review, and I was instantly turned off from seeing it. And it was written by a guy named Martin McDonagh, who's a Irish playwright, I believe, who wrote a play that I haven't seen, but I read and I loved it, called The Pillow Man. He's a really great writer, but he's a really great Irish writer. And so they said that this was his, like, you know, his, I think it was his first movie that they directed. And the chief complaint about it was that it was a movie about the American South as if it was told by a guy from Ireland. So everybody in it comes off looking like a ridiculous stereotype. And as bad as that movie probably was, or at least would have made me be annoyed about it, this guy is just unbelievable. And at no point can I see anybody looking at this and going, yeah, great, this looks good, let's do this. But there it is. It's right there on the screen. And I'm just like, the hell were they thinking?
I don't know. And the others, the other Southern guys weren't that bad.
Nobody was that. Even Billy Bob, for his stupid name, like the one line of dialogue that he had, didn't look like that. I mean, it was such a caricature. I mean,
yeah,
kind of like the cab driver. The cab driver was pretty bad, too. You know,
yeah, they usually don't do Americans very well.
They just, I mean, it's a really British
like
production.
Like Michael Madsen.
Yeah, that was my favorite. We get rid of Jodan Baker and we get Michael Madsen, who I love like the one shot of him on like the view screen or whatever it is, where he's got like the Heisman Trophy in the background and a shotgun over there, and it's just like,
yeah, there's the American flag and like buffalo horns on his desk and a bald eagle stuffed somewhere. Like, it was like, do they think we all look like this? Or he's always smoking a cigarette.
Right, yeah, he's always smoking.
Yeah, this was the fat Southern sheriff, you know, dipping the whole time, sweating like a pig. He doesn't know what he's doing or where he's supposed to go.
It's like,
it was annoying.
It was, well, that's the thing. Like, so the caricature is annoying because that I'm sure there's some guy that somewhere that sounds and talks like that. But the issue was not that it was over the top. The issue was that it went on for what seemed like a week.
Yeah, well, that was leading into my problem, but
that whole sequence went on for, yeah, it felt like 4 hours.
Yeah.
I was watching that for, and I was just like, you know, and then it just ends when a boat drives into another boat and blows up.
Wait, how did it end?
So,
oh, that's right. He throws gas on him and then he sets the boat to spin in a circle and he goes into a tanker and just blows up for no reason.
Is that what it, he threw gasoline on him?
Yeah, he threw gasoline on him. That's why he like couldn't see.
Oh, I couldn't figure out what that was.
So, and then he like, when he zooms up to the boat in his own speedboat, flips the handle so he just turns in circles, and then when he straightens out, he goes into like the hull of a decrepit ship and just blows up.
I wrote down like, what the hell was in that derelict thing that it just exploded?
Oh my God. Well, that was, and you know what else, before I get to my other point? Because things they just like to blow up in this movie. Remember when he's about to get eaten by the alligators?
Sure.
and he leads one into the big warehouse where they're cutting all the drugs.
Right.
And so he leads the alligator in, and all the scientists are like, oh my God, and they run. And then he burns that house full of drugs down. And I was like, why did he let an alligator in there before he burned it? To like chase everyone out?
Yeah, would you want to keep them in there to be eaten by the alligator?
Well, he burnt... Does he not care about burning them alive? They're all villains.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, quick, get out before I burn down the house.
Before I burn the place down? Is that the idea?
Maybe. I'm Ron Burgundy?
So, my big problems... The first one was the action scenes. They were horrible.
Yeah.
I thought they were horrible action scenes. And usually, a goofy Bond movie will have something that will save it. You know, they ski down a mountain while they're getting shot at, or skydiving, or what have you. Underwater scenes. This one didn't have a lot of scenes, but they were cut so poorly that I didn't understand what was going on. Like, and I went back a couple of times, because when they first destroyed J.W. Pepper's squad car, a boat goes through it because it can't clear the land. But it's like this little island, you know, two lakes or what have you.
Yeah.
Bond goes right over it. Bond's in the zippy little boat. Then all you do is hear a crash and you look over and the boat is hitting the car.
Yeah, they literally didn't have enough money to film that scene.
Right, it's like they skipped something. I was like, wait a minute, what happened there? I like went back a couple times, like, oh, nope, that's just, there's nothing, okay. And then when he was at the flying lessons at the little airport and he gets in the plane with the woman, it's like, oh, I'll be giving you the flying lessons. And I think they're going to take off. I think they're going to have some sort of aerial fight.
Nope.
He just zipped around. He zips around the airport, crashing into everything.
Yeah. And
but it's all in like quick cuts, so I can't tell where he is in relation to anything.
And apparently they covered all of the floors of those hangars with axle grease. And so whenever the car tries to turn gingerly around a corner at like 20 miles an hour, it just skids into a plane is made of styrofoam and just falls apart.
The whole time I'm like, are they really wrecking all these planes for no reason? Like, I get that a car isn't as fast as an airplane, but an airplane doesn't make right angle turns. So the cars would go flying like they were bumper cars.
The turning radius on, you know, on a prop plane is wider than that of a car.
I know. It was ridiculous. I was like, these scenes are really awful.
And then, like, he just goes through and shears the wings off the plane, and they go, oh, that's different. I didn't expect him to take the airplane nowhere.
Yeah. I was like, okay, well, that's...
subverting expectations, that's for sure.
And even too, when he first discovers the drugs and like a helicopter appears overhead and starts shooting at him like North by Northwest, I'm like, they're shooting their own drugs, what are they doing? And then the plane disappears. I was like, oh, that's it, just one pass. Okay,
well, the guy even says, oh, we can't see them anymore. Well, how'd you see them to begin with? Like, yeah. What exactly happened between when you saw him and when you didn't see him that you can't see him anymore?
Yeah, I don't know. And then they had the really cheesy bus chase that was also terrible. I was
like, this is the worst. Yeah. And for Christ's sakes, like, all right, so I have no problem with the boats kind of jumping over those little, like, you know.
Well, when you do it 30 times, it gets a little old. But you're right. Like, it
right,
goes over,
like,
the land
width
and then back
of the,
to war.
But,
yeah,
like, the part where they go through the wedding, they cover, like, a football field worth of space.
I know.
And I was like, guys, you, making it bigger doesn't help it to help you sell it. It makes it worse. Do it 15 times, but, like, each time should only be about 10 feet.
Like, what was that one? The World Is Not Enough, where he steals Q's little boat. At least that one had like a rocket booster on the back, so if it's on land, it will keep getting pushed.
Yeah, I mean that, but it was Q's boat. So when you steal Q's boat, you kind of like that. Just that setup makes you think, well, this boat has got to be kind of special. And so whatever hijinks we're going to get involved with in the next 20 minutes, I'm okay believing that it's possible because it came out of Cube Ranch. Fine. But it's, you take a boat that's just sitting on the dock of some rich former slave owner just sitting there sipping his mint julep.
Oh, my God. That's right.
Yeah, they had black servants. They couldn't have been doing this more on the nose.
It's good to have land.
Oh my God!
And my other big problem was they really took the over elaborate death schemes to the extreme in this one. I actually turned to my wife at one point because she was like down the hall doing something productive, and I was sitting here
living her life.
Yeah, you know, contributing to society. I was like, why don't they just shoot him? This is so annoying. Like, even I want him to die. We're gonna shoot him, and then we're gonna throw him out of an airplane. Okay, then we're going to have him eaten by crocodiles. That doesn't work. Then we're going to chase him out of a boat, and then we're going to have him eaten by sharks in my hangar. Assuming we don't have the snake eat him, the poisonous snake, during the voodoo ceremony. Like, it was just shoot him. Just pick up a gun and shoot him in the head.
It was too much.
Well, they just had to keep it, like, the movie would have been really short, I guess, but, like...
Yeah. Well, yeah. If it was for all the deaths that they, you know, they tried, there's like a 38 minute film left in this.
Yeah, and they bring him down from the club, and they put the arm things on him, and they confront him about sleeping with her. I'm like, oh my God! I thought the best scene in the whole movie was at the end when the guy comes on the train to kill him. Just a straight up fight scene. I was like, all right, this is exciting.
Yeah, that was. I didn't much care for that guy's, like, that didn't seem to be a very useful appendage he had there. It was
a giant claw? No.
Well, it wasn't so much that there was a claw, but like that kind of tube that didn't really bend.
Well, he lost his whole arm.
Right, but just the way it was designed, you know.
With the exposed wiring you can cut? Like a pair of braces.
But that was better. But it was like putting your arm in a piece of PVC pipe and wielding it around without bending it. It just,
I know.
Not a very effective villain. It's just bad. It's just bad design.
Well, this is the movie where they had the villains with gimmicks that, and they all had the names that matched their gimmicks, like Mr. Whisper.
Oh God, that was annoying.
Why would you have a henchman who can't tell you anything? Watch out.
Yeah.
You know, that would have really, having any other henchmen would have been very helpful in that scene.
Literally anybody else would have been fine. Yeah. Anyway.
I was shocked to see that the movie had good reviews at the time.
Yeah, I was shocked. Really surprised. And I mean, I kind of hate to keep coming back to it. Well, it was a different time. Because... that, you know, I can kind of see that with all the unbelievable racism, because fine, okay, people were a lot more racist back then, and that's something we've improved upon in recent years. But people had good taste back then, even if they were racists, and they could say, hey, this movie doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
And it's stupid.
And it's like, I thought... it was praised at the time for being a more realistic type of movie in that, well, I mean, which is ridiculous, but it's not a guy with a space laser. It's just a bad guy trying to do bad things in an extreme way. And I always think of that when I watch a Bond film, because our father was big on that. The best Bond villains do something like with an unexpected twist that you normally wouldn't do. That's why you need James Bond and not Felix Leiter. You know, so it's not so much that he wants to take over the world or sell drugs. He wants to destroy the drug economy in America and corner the market.
Right.
Very much the way, like, in Goldfinger, he didn't want to steal the gold. He wanted to destroy their gold, so his gold was more useful. And I was like, that would have been very interesting in a better movie.
Yeah.
You know, like I thought like, oh, well, that's an insane plan. But if you don't have a British agent mucking it up, then yeah, okay. It's a little weird.
Yeah. Yeah, somewhere in there is a good movie.
Yeah. So it was praised for that, but everything else about it was so awful. I mean,
so bad.
Not a lot of gadgets. And they wanted to tone down the gadgets, I thought was odd. Q isn't in this one.
Oh, that's true. He wasn't.
Apparently he was filming a TV show or something. But yeah. They were like, well, that's fine because we want to tone down the gadgets. And the only thing he had was the watch.
Right. Yeah. The Relics of Mariner.
Yeah. He had no car. He didn't have anything popping out of his suit.
Which is fine. I actually don't really miss the gadgets. They can be kind of fun. But
no, like, I thought it was fine.
Yeah, like I like the magnet bit. The fact that it was also a saw was I didn't know it did that. All right, that's convenient.
That at least makes sense.
Yeah,
I guess they would get in that kind of situation.
Yeah, like the subtle gadget stuff is cool. Like in GoldenEye when he has like the belt is also a grappling hook. Like you can kind of see that. The laser watch was always kind of a lot to me.
Exploding pen.
That's the best one. That's my favorite. Yeah. And it was just such a great scene. Christ, that's a good movie.
Yeah.
Let's go watch that movie now.
Feels like we'll never get to that one.
Oh, I know. We'll be here forever.
There's like 15 more of these.
So many more. Did you happen to catch the name of the upcoming one?
The Man with the Golden Gun.
No. The next, you know.
Oh, did they say what it is?
Shatterhand.
Okay.
I don't know what that means.
Are you sure that's what it is and not like the code name or something?
Pretty sure. I will effort that now as you talk about something else.
We don't have to look it up now.
Yeah, Shatterhand Bond, Shatterhand 2020.
2020?
Working title. Year. Okay, working title.
Working title, yeah. I would be...
It's not a good title.
I wouldn't be. No, I'm sure they'll change it.
It's not a bad one. I mean, like the. I mean, I'm trying to think about like the ones that Craig has had. So, you know, the first one was based on the book, and so that's fine. And then, Skyfall was okay.
Quantum of Solace.
That was the worst fucking title ever.
It was also a terrible movie.
Oh, it's just unbelievable. But and then Spectre was just okay, like it's straightforward. But yeah. Anyway, this sucked.
What did you think of the music?
It never stopped. It was absolutely fucking everywhere, and it like so this is not a bad song.
It's a bad song.
It's not a...
I hate this song.
Do you hate it or did you just get sick of it?
No, I hate it. And I'm tired of people telling me it's a good song.
Well, for a Bond movie, though, it's not bad. Not like for a song. I don't like drive around listening to Live and Let Die.
Even for a Bond movie, it's not a good song. Everyone's always like, oh, that one. That's the one that like actually charted and... They got Paul McCartney. Yeah, well, he did a crappy job. All right, it's not a good song. It's no Living Daylights. Or what's the one that actually went to number one? Was that View to a Kill? Oh, that's an awful song, too.
They're all bad. GoldenEye was good. Skyfall was great.
Yeah. I think Skyfall is probably the only really good one.
I don't know. I like the opening of like that whole kind of... The first few notes of GoldenEye is fun. Then Tina Turner shows up and like, whoa, okay.
Oh, my.
I don't know. Like, all right, so do you like the Guns N' Roses version?
Not really.
No.
It's a little better because it's not as wimpy as Paul McCartney.
Yeah, I guess that's like once you've heard the Guns N' Roses one and then you go back to listening to Paul McCartney, like, oh, yeah, I guess they could have like... really amped this one up a bit.
Yeah.
But
And you're right. They did play it all the time.
And then she comes out singing it in the jazz club. I'm like, what the hell?
Yeah.
What the hell are you doing?
I was like, well, they're getting their money's worth out of this.
Probably had that in the contract. You must play the song 17 times per half hour.
Well, we paid for it, so might as well throw it in there.
We've got nothing else.
Yeah.
It's just dead air otherwise. Christ. Trying to think. Did you watch the opening like silhouette credits thing? I forgot what they were.
They were pretty bare bones. They were black women this time.
Ooh.
I know. Their heads were on fire like they were in a voodoo ceremony. I was like, oh, it's going to be a voodoo thing.
Oh, yeah.
I guess the plastic rubber snake or whatever in the beginning is not clue enough.
The whole thing is so damn weird. All right. Well,
I you know, he was okay. She was easy to look at, but it was definitely like a step in the wrong direction for these movies.
Yeah, I'm curious to see. The next one is Golden Gun, right?
Yeah, that's a much different film. I've seen that one.
I saw it a while ago, and probably not even the whole thing. That's got
Christopher Lee.
Yeah.
And the little person.
Tattoo?
Yes. Nick-Nack, right?
Yeah, Nick-Nack is his name in the movie. Yeah. I'm curious about that one too. But see how that one holds up. Well, in the meantime, if you out there have thoughts about Live and Let Die, you should go to Twitter and Instagram and let us know what those thoughts are. We are at Three Drinks in Pod. You can find us on Facebook. Email us at threedrinksinpodcast@gmail.com. Find us on iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts. We're probably there. Click subscribe, tell your friends, and leave a review. Any further thoughts about Live and Let Die?
No, I think that's it.
Okay. All right, well, as always, please drink responsibly, and we will talk to you all next time.
Yeah, take care.
Bye. Say live and let die. Live and let die. Living life.